We have all experienced betrayal at some time in our lives. It might have been by a lover, by a friend, in our job, or in our family. The new book, Betrayed, A Survivor's Guide to Lying, Cheating, and Double Dealing, highlights actual stories of betrayal and offers a roadmap for how to deal with it and sometimes how to get even. The book is by Elaine Eisenman, who holds a doctorate in industrial and organizational psychology, and Susan Stoutberg. She's a founder of the Belizean Grove and a co-founder of Women Corporate Directors Foundation. She's also a governance advisor to Atlantic Street Capital. Susan was in New Mexico recently and talked with me about her book. Well, Susan Stoutberg, thank you for joining us on Women's Focus.
Great to be here.
You're a founder of the Belizean Grove. Among your members are Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Can you tell us what that is and why you wanted to start it?
Well, actually, Sonia had to resign when she became Supreme Court Justice. I founded the Belizean Grove because in my years working in Washington, I noticed how members of the Bohemian Grove were brought down to Washington as assistant cabinet directors, go back to Wall Street, make a lot of money, come back down as cabinet members themselves. And I watched the network the men were able to create for themselves and then to have a three-week summer vacation at a camp out in the Redwoods in California. And I wanted to be able to have women from around the world be able to connect, help each other grow, learn about problems that might be out there, and to succeed. So I wanted to go someplace first where you weren't going to a spot where they could sort of be on their computers all the time or constantly doing emails. And Belize at that point was very stranded and three planes and a boat to get to. We now rotate throughout South America and Central America.
And the Bohemian Grove was started by, it was an all-male organization that's been meeting for decades.
Yes,
male only.
Over 100 years, yeah. Male only. And they were able to afford a 3,000-acre redwood forest camp. We can't do that. So we started going to Central and South America, and every 10 years, we come back to the U.S. We also have other meetings in the U.S. so that we're going on trips that aren't too far away, but we're learning about other people, and especially what's going on in Latin America. So many Americans ignore Latin America.
How does one become a member of the Belizean Grove?
You have to be nominated by someone who's already in the Grove. And brains are good, charm is better, and kindness is best. So you're supposed to have been someone who has achieved a great deal, but also someone who is kind and good. We see enough big elbows everywhere else we are in the world. And so the Grove is all about helping others and trying to make a difference.
I want to turn to your book, Betrayed, A Survivor's Guide to Lying, Cheating, and Double Dealing. What prompted you to write this?
It was interesting because I've written a number of other books, but it was at a surprise, actually, a birthday party for myself a few years ago. And we all sat around talking about traits we'd seen, issues we'd seen, and each of us had been betrayed. I thought, this is fascinating because we've all been betrayed. How do we learn how to deal with betrayal? How do we learn to sort of see it coming? How do we get even? How do we forgive? And so I started working with a friend on the book, actually another Grover, and we interviewed over 50 people around the world on how one avoids being betrayed, and if you are betrayed, how you bounce back.
What is betrayal? How do you define it?
Betrayal is when someone else is taking advantage of you for their own good.
How did you find these stories? They're pretty compelling because they're personal. They're also business betrayals. They run the gamut.
Well, it was interesting. I have a number of networks. In addition to the Belizean Grove, I founded something called Women Corporate Directors, which is 80 chapters around the world. And then when you get to be as old as I am, you just have a lot of connections. And so we started working on this book. It was amazing how many people, when they heard we were working on it, said, oh, boy, do I have a story, and let me share it with you. So people started coming to us with stories, too.
And what was your own story of betrayal?
There were a number, but the one I talk about in the book is in the introduction, and it's about how you could also turn betrayal to your advantage. So I was making a speech once in Washington, and I saw the man that I was dating come into the back of the room with another woman. I thought that was sort of interesting. So as soon as that speech was over, I sort of ducked the people trying to sort of talked to me and rushed to the back of the room where he was trying to get this young lady out of the room. And I didn't say anything to him. I just said to her, thank you for coming. What interests you in being here today? And she said, well, John says that you're a great speaker. I can learn how to be a better speaker. So he brought me here to hear you today. I said, well, that's great. Here's my card. Could you be yours? I'd be glad to talk to you sometime about speaking techniques. Meanwhile, he's trying to get her out of the room. So we talked, and I tried to give her some counsel on making presentations. And I said, by the way, how long have you been sort of dating John? She said, oh, it's very serious, and we've been going out now for a couple of years. I said, well, I hate to tell you, I thought that it was very serious with me, too, and we're going out with a couple of years, and obviously it's not if he's got you as well. So tell you what, I think you're really bright and interesting. If you discover he is two-timing you, give me a call, and I'll be glad to introduce you to some other men. And about 2 weeks later, she called and said, you're right, there's several other women, too. I said, yes, I thought there probably would be. So I introduced her to the man she married. She's been married over 30 years. So that's how you can take a betrayal and figure out, okay, there's got to be some light in this tunnel, at the end of the tunnel. In this case, I thought Teresa was a really bright, interesting sort of person. And so,
where's John these days? Who knows?
Well, I can't wait to sort of send him a copy of the book so we want to track him down. She doesn't want to have anything to do with him. But it's always sort of fun to, you know, send a book to someone. Yeah, obviously it's ghosted, and let them sort of see what their effect of their actions are.
Why is betrayal so emotionally devastating?
Well, it's particularly devastating for women. When a man is betrayed, he figures out how to move on and does move on. When a woman's betrayed, she takes it personally. She agonizes over it. And instead of being able to move on right away, she ruminates about what went wrong, what could she have done. So she's looking to the past, not to the future. So what we hope betrayed does, there's hope women to see that you can't just agonize over the past. You've got to figure out how to move forward, what lessons you've learned from what you've been through, and then to move forward more quickly. So hopefully these stories show you how other people have moved forward.
When you say it, they take it personally, but it feels so personal when it happens.
But it is. But, you know, when these things happen, you also have to realize that the betrayer is attacking you, and you're the one that's sort of being hit, and you're the one that's sort of down. Why not bounce back and figure out how you can sort of move on?
What are the different kinds of trust that are betrayed? You outlined some of those.
Yes, there's various kinds of trust, whether it's business, personal. And what you need to sort of figure out is whether you need to work with this person ever again, or whether you can sort of, if you don't have to work with them again, how you move on.
So there's also, you talk about blind trust, which comes up. Maybe you went to work with a friend or you went to the family business and it seems like, well, I don't need to worry about vetting or making sure this is all right because I know this person.
Right. And family business can be one of the toughest places to work because a lot of decisions are made not because of your competence, not because you've brought talent to an area, but because it's family and people all want to sort of one-up each other in many cases.
And then there's organizational trust. A lot of the stories you have are people in the corporate world or the work world.
Right, both men and women and how you deal with that and how you move on.
Yeah. And then there's wise trust. What is that?
Wise trust is going into a situation, understanding the pros, the cons, what's happening out there, and figuring out how you can work out an agreement for as long as you're going to be involved in that situation and be able to move forward.
Some of the stories are really horrible. They're all real?
They're all real. Each story is real. What we have done to protect people, some people are out going on the media tour with us each place, and some people really want to sort of keep it quiet. But we've changed the names, and in some places, the place where it happened so that it goes a bit more. But they're all true stories.
You have been in the corporate world for a long, long time. You know a lot of women who've been in the corporate world, and coming up at a time when, it was, I'm sure you were often the only woman in the room a lot of times. So were you startled at all by any of these stories?
No, because as they say, I started out as a national television correspondent, first local, then national, and covering the White House, and then working in the White House. I can't tell you how many times I'd be asked by a station manager to come in for an interview. And they would point to the couch and say, well, the first thing is that you need to do to sort of get on the air on this TV station is join me on the couch.
And
you have to say, I'm sorry, that's not part of my job interview process, and have to walk out. So it was really blatant. It was also very blatant on Capitol Hill in the old days, too. The men ruled things, and it was a tough world, but you learn how to keep your head up high and ask good questions and get the scoops. And so people have to come to you and say, okay, we want you to start our TV bureau because we know you can get better stories than someone else.
You started off as a journalist. How long did you do that? Who did you work for?
I started out as a local reporter at KYW-TV in Philadelphia. And then I wanted to become a national TV correspondent at 21 in Washington. And Westinghouse
it's good to have ambitions.
Management laughed and said, back to the streets, kid. So I lined up a bunch of TV stations on the East Coast. Actually, I happened to compete with Westinghouse and the King TV stations on the West Coast. For 2 years, I ran an independent bureau in Washington. And then Westinghouse came back and said, you win. You've got more scoops. You're all over the news stories. You could open our first TV bureau. So I did that. And this obviously dates me. But after a couple of years, I was really frustrated sitting on the White House lawn being lied to every day. I really wanted to find out what was going on inside the White House. And this is during, you know, Watergate. And so I applied to be the first journalist, to be a White House fellow. I was fortunate enough to be the first TV journalist chosen. So then I had 6 months working on Kissinger's staff at the NSC.
What did that mean? You were on his staff?
Yes.
You had to like sort of leave journalism and
I
be
did.
In
I,
the inside.
Yes, I left journalism. The White House Fellowship is a wonderful program, which is started by John Gardner about 55 years ago, where young leaders are chosen to come spend a year in Washington where you work for a cabinet member, and then you have two or three lunches a week with other cabinet members, and then you do all kinds of domestic and international travel. It's a fantastic program, and it's a great opportunity for people in their late 20s, early, mid-30s to be able to have a year working in Washington at the highest levels, but not to be seen as a Democrat or Republican. You're just there to learn and to give back. So encourage people to go on White House Fellows, you know, a website, and apply. You have to get your applications in each year by usually the end of December, and you're chosen in the spring.
Wow, so you worked on Kissinger's staff. That must have been interesting.
It was, because my master's was in international relations, and I'd been covering Capitol Hill, so he was interested. But then Rockefeller was confirmed as vice president, and I wanted to work for him, and I was fortunate in the fact that both his wives had gone to the same prep school that I'd gone to, so I was chosen to move over to Rockefeller's staff, which was fascinating.
And then how did you work your way into the corporate world?
Well, it was sort of accidental. I after my White House fellowship, I got married. My husband was leaving Washington. You know, you work for a company in Philadelphia. Yeah, I didn't want to go back to local murders, rapes, and suicides. I'd gone on to being a Washington correspondent, so I figured what I've got to do is go to the corporate world. So that's what I did. Then I just wrote books on the side just to sort of keep up on with journalism.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm talking with Susan Stoutberg about her new book she wrote with Elaine Eisenman called Betrayed, A Survivor's Guide to Lying, Cheating, and Double Dealing. Why don't we trust our gut when we know something's wrong? You talk about that a lot.
Right. I think people try to rationalize, well, this theory might be what's affecting me or that theory might be affecting me. But we really have, from our childhood, developed guts of this person's lying. This is not the right situation to be in. I should be crossing this beam. And so you really have to sort of develop that gut because you really are being told, stop, look, and listen. There might be something going on here.
And how do you overcome betrayal so that you don't kind of lose trust in all humanity, but you don't get fooled again?
Right. I think what you have to sort of do is take a look at the situation. Were there things that you did that lured you or made you vulnerable to be betrayed? And then you have to be able to figure out, you know, how to move forward. And that means whether you're spending time with your friends, whether you're spending time with counselors to help you sort of build confidence again. So let me give you an example then of someone who discovered that she'd been betrayed. So there's a woman who had been married once before, hadn't worked out. She really wanted to have a husband who could take her to parties and be a companion. And she meets a man who was thrown out of his first marriage because he had been playing around with other people. But she thought, I can change him. And he's very attractive, want to sort of have an escort. Fast forward to she is in the lawyer's office because he has died. And the lawyer says, I really don't want to have to sort of talk about this, so I'm going to put one of your trustees here to tell you what happened. And the trustee says, I hate to tell you this, but he left $3.5 million to his mistress, and there's not much left for you. So she sits and thinks about this. What signs had she missed? What had gone wrong? And as she thinks back over this, she thinks about the fact that her friends would say, I think I saw your husband with someone else at the theater. There was a check for $50,000 written to Cash. There was the fact that he didn't really like to jog, but all of a sudden he started jogging every day. Well, he bought his mistress a house just five blocks away. So he never lost much weight jogging, but he got some exercise on the trip. And so there are all these signs that she should have picked up. And so what we try to do in the book is say, okay, there are signals you should look for. And in each case, she would say, I've been told you're at our club all the time with another woman. Is this true? And he always sort of said, no, not of course not, or it was a business deal or whatever. So you have to really sort of have your feelers up and watch for these kinds of things.
So getting attuned to seeing red flags is important. Those are examples of some red flags.
Yes.
Those are red flags. What are some other things that, like when we're talking about red flags?
Well, I think if you find someone lying about anything, you begin to think, okay, this person is very casual about their lies and where they're going. So you start seeing lies. You really need to sort of start checking out things. If someone's taking a lot of trips, you know, and you're not included. And obviously, you want to make sure that the person is not taking pictures and leaving them around. Many of the people that we interviewed for the book found out because their spouses were careless that they were off on weekends with other people. And there were the posted pictures of their husband at a massage table with another woman. But why
they weren't very smart.
No, they weren't. But we found case after case of people being a little careless about what they thought they could get away with.
What about in the workplace situations or in leadership situations?
Mm-hmm. Well, in workplace situations, too, I was just hearing this weekend a story about an interesting young woman where she's working on a team. She came up with all these great ideas for the team to move forward. And one of the men took them all, wrote them up, and claimed they were all his to get a promotion. So in this case, she complained first to her boss, who said, well, there's not much I can do about it. Then she went to the head of the company and said, listen, I want to tell you that I think this is unfair treatment, and here are the ideas I had. I'd like to come up with other ideas, but I'm not going to sort of do it if I'm going to be treated this way. And then this young man is being paid much more than I am, too, besides stealing my ideas. And the CEO of the company said, I really admire your courage. You're not supposed to be coming to see me. And we'll see if we get you paid more. And please let me know if this kind of thing happens again. So you do need to speak up. You do need to defend yourself.
Yeah, I was impressed by – you had a story of a sexual harassment story, a woman who's a purchasing manager, I think. And
yes.
Things had already been ordered and she needed the paperwork signed. And her boss basically said, go up to New York with me and sleep with me, and then I'll get those signed. And
right.
She said no. She walked out, threw them in the trash, and said no.
Right, right. And then he obviously needed her expertise, and so he had a secretary call her back and say, okay, we're going to buy all the things you need to have bought. But in the future, she just never went to them again. She just took the papers to the secretary and said, here's what we need to buy for this department.
So she called his bluff, basically.
Yes.
I mean, that can go. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
But then at least you know.
Yeah.
And also, in that case, the woman's spouse did not stand by her. He said, my God, how can you fight back at things like this? Just get along, go along. She realized, his fiancé, that he's probably not the good person to marry. So sometimes these situations also give you the opportunity to see who your partner is and if they're the right person for the long term.
A lot of these situations involve reversing a power dynamic. How do you do that?
Well, I think you have to sort of have a pretty good idea of what's happening, out and around you. Then you have to figure out what strengths you have, what situations you're going into where you're going to be sort of stronger. Surround yourself with people that are supportive and help you move forward.
Many of your stories involve women being thrown under the bus. How typical is this?
Well, I think it does happen a good deal. And as the Me Too movement shows, women are beginning to speak up now finally and sort of saying, this isn't fair. And in many cases, if a man or woman are thinking about applying for a job, the man will say, I only have 50% of what's requested in that job spec, but I'm going for it. Woman will say, I only have 50%. I better sort of spend another year or two perfecting my skill sets.
No, they'll have like 90% say, I'm not a qualified.
Right, exactly. So we have to encourage women to go forward and push themselves, and that you do have skill sets and you do need to move forward with confidence.
If your gut is telling you something's wrong, what are some steps you should follow?
You sit back and you think about, okay, is this the only way I can handle the situation? How else can I handle the situation? What friends do I have that I can sort of talk this, sort of out with? And just really sits back and recharges. I think one of these often happens with women is we get more and more worried. We don't sleep. And then with having the sleepless nights makes you even less able to sort of deal with a tough situation.
Control is important here. You don't want to lose it. But there's some instances you highlight where hanging on too tightly can also be a huge mistake if you're in a leadership
Yes,
position.
You need to know what's going on, but you just can't control, you know, everything. Especially with the millennials who want to move on very fast, you're going to be able to give them some interesting assignments, so they are going to be challenged and want to keep working.
So it's a trusting people. You can't control everything.
No, you can't.
Or that might backfire on you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You have a chapter about revenge.
Yes.
Is that a good idea?
Well, revenge is a dish best eaten cold. So it's not a good idea to do right away. It's usually a better idea to sit back and think about, okay, what is the right way to handle the situation and then do so. We have some wonderful revenge stories in the book. One interesting one is a young woman who is doing very well at a law firm, and she gets pregnant. So she walks to the senior partner and says, I'm very excited, I'm pregnant, but I've done very well at this law firm. And I really want to be a partner before I, you know, go off on maternity leave. And senior partner looks at her and says, you know, hey, I'm not going to have a woman partner, so back to the streets. But she said, I won every case.
This is a while ago when you could perhaps get away with
yes,
that.
Yes, this,
yeah.
is, yes, this is before all this of the new legislation. And so he says, well, picks up a case from his desk, says, here's one you'll never win. No one's going to win this case. If you win it, I'll make you partner. So she spends the next 4.5 months with a team working on trying to sort of win this case. It turns out in her 9th month, she wins the case. So the law firm gives her a big luncheon, and then she goes to see the senior partner and said, well, I won the case. I'm so thrilled to become a partner now. I said, you don't understand, do you? He said, well, what do you mean I don't understand? I won the case. You said I won the case, I get to be a partner. He said, I'm not going to make a woman partner in this law firm. So, you know, back to the streets. As she walks out, the senior partner's secretary says, you know, he's done this before, and I have affidavits of it. Every time a woman gets to be partner level, out she goes. So she takes these, has the baby a week later, joins another law firm, bigger law firm, is doing well. But she's always thinking about, what is the best way to get back to this guy? Because he's done it not just to me, but to other women in the law firm. Well, she gets a call from a White House assistant general counsel saying, this guy's up for federal judgeship. We hear you might have something on him. She has something on him. She gave him all the documents, and the man never became a judge. So there's an example of keeping your powder dry, keeping the information, figuring out what is the right time to be able to sort of say something. Sometimes someone else comes to you. Sometimes they don't. Can I share another story?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fun story of a woman hairdresser on an island off the Northeast Coast. Her husband had died, and she had to support 2 small children and run a hairdresser sort of shop. And one summer, someone came by and said he really wanted to work there for the summer. He seemed bright and attractive, so she hires him. And he becomes close to her children, and they decide to get married. And so the next summer, he says, I hate to tell you this. This isn't working out. I'm bringing up my partner. And we both have dogs, and we're going to take over the shop. And so you're out. And this is a shop she'd been working on for years. So she spends the summer driving around in her car with her blow dryers or going to people's homes. But this is not the way you support 2 children. So she had lost her husband. He was with another man. And what she did is, you know, they both took the little puppies everywhere. So she goes to the local postmistress. Postmistress reads every mail, piece of mail that comes through, knows everyone in this small town. And she sort of said, these 2 men are abusing their dogs. They're not being sort of very kind to them. You're with the ASPCA. What do you think we do? The postmistress gets insulted. It alerts everyone in town. These people were nasty to dogs, and out they went. So,
boy, that is harsh.
Well, but she was losing her business. And so what do you do?
If you just tuned in, this is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm talking with Susan Stoutberg. She's the co-author of the book Betrayed, A Survivor's Guide to Lying, Cheating, and Double Dealing. You also have a chapter on forgiveness. Is that a route you should consider, even if you've been horribly wrong?
Yes, because forgiveness is really better for you than the person you forgive. It gives you a chance to sort of move beyond what has happened to you and move forward in a positive light. This person may never be your best friend again, but at least you've you moved on and you were able to sort of know that you learned a lesson, and hopefully they learned their lesson and move on.
Yeah, you had some good stories. Some people were able to do that. There are some people who just, they couldn't get to that point.
Right.
It was too bad.
Some people just have to sort of say, look, I'm just not going to deal with this again, and I'm moving on, but I'm not going to forgive.
Mm-hmm. Your last chapter is about resilience after you've been through these situations. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that... That's sort of coming out on the other side.
Yeah, resilience is really coming out on the other side, that you've had a chance to realize what happened to you, figure out how you're going to handle it, and then be able to move forward. And so resilience is very important, to be able to bounce back and to be able to go forward with more confidence and be able to look for what could go wrong again, but this time have a better idea of what could go wrong and how you're going to handle it. So we have a lot of positive stories about moving on.
What are your plans with this book that you wrote with Elaine Eisenman? Are you going to be doing, workshops? Are you going to be doing webinars?
So we have a great website, bouncefrombetrayal.com, capital B, but the rest is just bouncefrombetrayal.com, small initials. And you can go on there and take quizzes, and you can sort of see how other people have handled betrayals, or great quotes and whatever. And then we're both separately doing a national media tour. We are doing a number of sessions around the country for corporate boards. We have a couple stories in there about betrayals in the corporate boardroom. And so we're using those as case studies. Elaine's already done that in Panama, and they were booked to do it throughout a lot of the rest of the country. I've done it out in L.A. This spring. So hopefully we'll have lots of interest, and we are doing a national media tour. We are doing these lectures.
What has been the reaction as you've gone and talked to people about this and offered these tools?
I think people really enjoy it. What we do when we go out and do each book party, too, is have someone who's in the book there speak. And so it's not just Elaine or I telling a story. It is we tell a story, too, a bit about the philosophy of the book. But then we actually have people that were in that book saying, here's how I was damaged. Here's how I bounced back. Here's how you can bounce back.
Well, Susan Stoutberg, I think this is – people will be really interested to look at the website.
It's a fun read. The website's great. You can send in your betrayal story. Mm-hmm. And you can win a free book. And some of the stories we've got have just been amazing how people bounce back. Do you have time for one quickie?
Yeah.
So here's just one that came in to the website. A couple were getting a divorce. She asked for the house in Palm Beach. She said, no. He was going to sell the house. But she said, but I want it. He said, I'm selling it. So she climbs up to the balustrades, and she fills all the balustrades where the curtains are with dead clams and dead shrimp. So he goes to try to sell the house, and it stinks. And he brings in these cleaning services. They do the carpets. No one can find out what's wrong. After 6 months, he finally says, I can't sell this house. No one even wants to come into it. It stinks so. She says, fine, I'll take it. She takes it. She goes to the balustrades, takes out all the dead shrimp, takes out all the dead clams, cleans the balustrades, and she gets the house. So what we try to do on the website and elsewhere is show you, yes, difficult things happen, but you can bounce back.
That's great. So are you going to have another book if you're getting more stories?
Well, we're getting a lot of stories, so maybe it becomes a TV series or maybe another book. We'll see. But people are coming in with – it's amazing. Everywhere you sort of go, you tell a betrayal story, and people say, yes, but let me tell you my betrayal story. So you have a lot of people that tell you their betrayal stories and share them.
Wow. Well, Susan Stoutberg, thank you so much. It's been really interesting.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here.